Hey, it's Lance, your host of yesterday's concert. Before we get this episode started, I want to take 25 seconds to tell you about my other show, Jam Journals. Jam Journals is a podcast that takes you on a journey through music history, featuring live performances from some of the most iconic concerts of all time. Each episode recounts a different concert experience through a dramatic narrative that brings the memories to life with vivid detail and emotion. Join us as we take a trip down memory lane of some of the most unforgettable concerts in recent history. Jam Journals is available everywhere you get podcasts. Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
You're having to be the one to believe in yourself when no one else will. And that's what makes songwriting songwriting, I think, because there's no have or should or even one who just does because they feel like they want to or they need to or they should. That's where you have songwriting really happening. It's playing to your empty coffee shops. It's playing to places for yourself. And it's not about having lack of aspiration, because ultimately I want to play my music to the world. I want everyone to listen and to feel something good from what I make. That's my goal. So having to believe in yourself when no one else is giving a damn is really a big part of it.
Grab your earplugs for another episode of Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode we talk to Danny Lee Blackwell, aka Nightbeats, who discuss his newest album, Rajan, the creative process, freedom, and living in the present. All right, Danny. We've been chatting for a few minutes. We've already got you're wearing a Mavericks jersey, so we've already got our beef out of the way as a Grizzlies fan. So how you doing today, man? You doing good other than that?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking.
A couple weeks ago, you played Austin Psych Fest, and I'm so jealous you got to go. I looked at the lineup. It's absolutely incredible lineup this year. How were those performances?
It was cool, man. It was real cool. I got to see a lot of people I've been trying to see for a long time. It was a family affair in a certain sense. The lineup for Saturday, the day that we played, was we were before Ravenettes, who I really like, and Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and Black Angels, you know, two projects that I've been huge fans of and gotten to work with over the years together. So, man, yeah.
Killer.
So cool. Killer. So cool. What can I say?
Well, as is tradition on the show, we like to start with some icebreakers just to have a little fun. So my first question for you is, as a guitar player in your guitar rig, what do you think is your secret weapon?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. Secret weapon. Okay. I think in a battle, the element of surprise is really important. So I guess my secret weapon is the ability to, okay, it's something where, like, if you're like a trapeze artist and you fall a lot, sometimes it looks like you're about to fall, but you're kind of used to falling. Like, you know what it feels like, and it's about to happen. Like, you kind of know what's going on in your gut and with your hands and with your sweat and all these different things. So I think maybe the foresight for failure. So in a sense that, like, if I am thrown up against like a back line that doesn't work, if I, you know, break three strings, if I have, you know, my pedals stop working, or if a battery gets wet, or, you know, I drip a lot of sweat usually during my sets. So there was a while there where, like, every night I would just have to know that something was going to fuck up, like something was going to break, or like I was going to have to figure it out in the moment. So I think that's a strength. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily a secret weapon, because, like, you know, pedals and tools and things, like, if you start to be defined by those things, then you kind of paint yourself into a corner, I think. Like, for instance, I would have said my Digitech Whammy octave pedal 10 years ago, but I don't even touch that thing anymore. It's right here, but I never play it, because I feel like there's other ways to say those things with other things, you know. I don't know if that really answers your question, but
no, that's really cool. I like it. I like the perspective on it. So have you simplified your rig in recent years then?
It's always been relatively simple. Like I keep a fuzz or like an overdrive pedal with me. I have a delay sometimes. I have a phaser that I like to bring in, but I don't always use it because I think wah pedal is like very tumultuous thing. I think for one, I used to just break those things all the time. I used to just like be heavy footed, so I just like slam it and then it would crack, and then the next thing I know, I'd go through like three crybabies a week. So I don't really like pedals in the same way that I think a lot of guitarists like pedals, and maybe that's a little bit, you know, a popular opinion, but simplicity, you know, I think it really lets you do what you intend to do more,
It's really cool.
you know, lets you like kind of see the road, you know.
No, I dig that, dude. That's awesome. Okay, so next question. So I was reading up about you, and one of the things that I read about you that I found fascinating was you had a goal of doing a tour of US prisons.
Yeah.
Have you had any luck doing that?
You know, that was something I was looking into before 2020. So around 2019, I was really getting the idea, and I was starting to write more for outlaw R&B, and it's not picked up from where I hoped it would, but at this point the idea sort of shifted more to getting music into prisons. So like having, you know, there's libraries. Well, there should be music libraries too, and hopefully there's sections for art and music. And you know, there's a yeah. How much time we got? I would love to pick up from where that endeavor left off, but right now it's a little bit still.
I got you. What gave you the heart for prisons and things like that?
Well, you know, I never did any time, but every time I have had my rights stripped of me, it leaves an impression on you. In my case, it's happened a few times, and it's happened a few times overseas also. So like, you know, the idea of being locked up is just something that I think I could understand a little bit. And I'm not here, you know, tattooing your eye drops or nothing on me, but it's definitely a it's an idea that I think it again, I don't want to take up too much time with this because I could spin out with this, but I think the idea of providing something as natural as art to people is real important for the human psyche. And if prisons are supposed to be in some form of rehabilitation for folks, then I know from personal experience that nothing made me feel more human than hearing music when I was young that resonated with me and made me feel like less of a weirdo, you know, like a, or maybe more of a weirdo, but like there's other weirdos, and there's people that make mistakes, and there's people that can be brought back into conversation if they have the same, you know, access as other people. And I think music is something that is all of those things. It combines everything from emotional sort of literacy of experience and communication and things, you know. I mean, obviously Johnny Cash had a good mind of it, and I think he was someone who I personally, you know, really respect and looked up to when I was younger. But yeah, you know, it's for everyone. It's for the common person. And music, especially the stuff that I write, isn't supposed to be straight to the point a little bit. If that's the way you want it.
That's killer, dude. That's so killer. And I mean, and I kept when you're talking, I kept thinking about like, how many times has a song changed my life? How many times have I heard somebody
Yeah.
say like such and such band that their album saved my life or it gave me a new perspective?
Big time.
And I'm sure as a performer, you get that often, like people coming up to you and be like, "Hey, man, this song changed my life," or "This your show changed my life."
That's super bananas. Like I every time like someone like is able to communicate that I've had any iota of an impact on their existence, like it's, you know, at the end of the day, compliment, you know, there's a lot of philosophies on how to even just take a compliment, you know, like some people, you know, have more vitriolic perspective on critics and reception and perception. I think I'm just flattered most of the time, you know, because I don't feel that way for myself necessarily, but I know that like that's not really, it's not really my job to feel that way either. You know, like, oh, thank you for insert compliment here, you know, like that's amazing. And if anything, that's it's really sweet to hear. But yeah, it's a process that doesn't have really any ownership, you know. So if someone feels something from something I did, then I'm stuck because it's like they can feel that way for themselves. It's not like I brought that to them. It's just that they felt something from the reverberations of the sound and the chord structure and maybe the words that was able to, which again isn't mine. None of the art isn't something to be owned or held, you know, I don't think. Especially live music, you know, music is sort of the expulsion of what's inside, and then somehow magically it creates a flame in the distant galaxy, eternal flame, creation, life. Okay.
I mean, at the very least, you're a
Ooh.
vessel for the music. So, I mean, you're a guide for these people in some way, even if you don't want the responsibility of claiming that for someone, like you are still a vessel for the music.
I would gladly accept that responsibility. However, I feel like it's a if you get your intention mixed up, I guess, then it has the ability to really kind of throw off what you create and why you create it. So, you know, a teaching position, for instance, is something that you need to respect, right? You know, especially in different cultures, there's a higher regard for the teacher or even old folks in general, you know? So, yeah, I agree that it's like a position that exists and needs to have a certain level of self-awareness of and things. But I'm focused more on making things right now as opposed to like what the reaction is. The moment that I 100% believe that person is, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
That one of the questions I had for you is like, I mean, as a songwriter, you get to translate the absurdity of life into lyrics, into music, and you get to channel that. So like we can talk about the new album with this. I mean, like, what were you translating for Rajan? What were you trying to get like the absurdity like compressed down to into for this album?
Well, I guess one of the main things I'd say about this record is that it is unfiltered, distilled down, clear versions of what I think love is. I think the love of a mother to her child is, you know, one of the only unconditional love there is, you know. It's a very strong thing, you know, immovable type of galactic force type of stuff, you know. So the idea of not just dedicating certain songs and styles and lyrics and words and, you know, metaphors and things like that, I think it's more about the harnessing of this, just a culmination of all the things that brought me here today, good and bad, you know. So I love instruments, man. I love making sounds. I love like getting grooves together and putting them and then realizing that no, this song is, dude, this song's about a June bug. Did you realize this song was about a June bug when we started writing the song? You know, like that's the conversation I'll have, you know, with myself. So I think you just need to come in with your own interpretation to things. And I'm a big fan and proponent of people having their own mind on everything, you know. Make if they feel like it's there's like a record or a style that is like a distilled agony of like their current situation in a certain place, then that record to me could be my pump up music for the batting cages. I don't know, like that. I hope that people can find an energy in the music that resonates with them, I guess. And I don't know if that makes any sense.
I mean, then what is your creative process then? Do you, 'cause I've read about, like, I read a little bit, another interview about kind of your creative process and how you enter things and how you kind of pass up on stuff if you don't kind of get like the feeling and sensations if it doesn't hit you immediately. Are you ever, I mean, this, I guess it's a two-part question then. It's like, so what is your creative process? And are you ever fearful that if you don't have the lightning bolt moment immediately, that you're just dismissing something too fast and that it may have just been a grower instead? A lot for two questions.
No, now you're speaking my language. I think that the expectation of what a songwriter is supposed to be or do is generally conceived by non-songwriters. So for the sake of conversation and hopefully maybe turning some people on to picking up a pen today and writing some shit down, there A is no rule to any sort of result or song thing, their album, EP, whatever you want to call it, creation. There's no rules. So the process creatively, I think maybe, yeah, again, for the sake of conversation, if we were to break it down into like, what does the studio look like? What is the notebooks look like? What does the hour of the day, like all these different things that kind of like go into like what people might answer, like, oh, well, I make my coffee and then I listen to my demo and then I do some, some things and I practice my scales and all these things. I don't really have anything to say as far as what someone else should do to get to a place to be themselves. Because I think ultimately songwriting is an extension of yourself. It's part of your instinct. It's what you like, man. It's like what you want to hear and feel over and over and over again. I had a friend recently who sent me something and he wanted just my opinion on it. And that's an open invitation to my friends, to like, please, like, send me whatever and I'll listen to it. And if you want, I'll give you my opinion. If not, then that's cool too. But the point I'm trying to make is that if someone is looking for a sense of approval from something, I know what that's like. Like I have searched in some form, subconsciously or consciously, for approval my entire life, right? I think a lot of people do. I think they say they don't, but there's different forms of it. But when it comes to creating something that feels right, only you are going to know what the hell that means, because you might play a show and listen back to, for instance, like early shows, like there's probably some like footage somewhere, maybe like on my sister's camcorder or something like that. But I remember looking at videos of my playing back in the day and just being so embarrassed, just like, man, how could I sing like that? Like, how could I possibly wake up and like think like that was a good idea to like plug in that loud also and write these songs and be playing with these folks? Like there's just like so much of a process of like critique and breaking down and deconstruction and all these things that happen that like, hey, I don't think I'd be a really good teacher in this sense at this point to explain like what you need to do besides just do. But creatively, I listen to rhythm, man. I love drums, I love beats, I love things that like have some sort of metronome that, to me, like rhythm is a very holy thing. Like it's used in prayer, it's used in meditation, it's used in sacrifice. It's a very like primal part of the human psyche, I think, that when you're able to blend rhythms with melody and you're adding a message to it, and then all of a sudden you created a whole new feeling altogether that can't just be defined as beat and bass. Whoa, how does the guitar even like come into play at this point? Well, you don't think. Like, for instance, Hot Gee, like that's a song on the opening track of the record. I didn't think for 1 second what I was going to play before I played the guitar on that. Opening lines the whole way through, just one take. And I felt like something that we could learn from, maybe if we want, from Eastern music and specifically South Asian Indian classical music, is that a lot of times these players, they don't know each other before they get on stage with each other. A tabla player and a sarod player and a veena player, they might never have crossed paths. Maybe they've had one talk on the conversation, which was like, make sure that the menu is vegetarian, for the green room or whatever. But it's about learning your own language and coming into a room and then being and then expressing that thing. So songwriting maybe and can be something that happens pre that moment, maybe we had to sort of like carve out like where songwriting exists in that creative process. Like if that is a certain thing, then maybe it's pre-recording. Maybe songwriting is just pre-recording, it's the time you spend creating what you want to say, because before songs were recorded, it was constantly just orally translated and passed on. So my definition of what songwriting can be might be very different than what it feels like for anybody, really. I mean, just name an artist and they might tell you that, well, you need to have a chorus and you need to have something that hooks you, a hook, hook, hook. Everyone talks about a hook. It's like, well, what kind of fish are we looking for here? What kind of hook do we need? Like, I don't know, are we whale watching, or are we trying to like, are we Tom Hanks and Castaway. Like, what kind of hook do we need for the moment?
That's cool. I'm trying to figure out what I'm understanding you a little bit. And where does pursuing the muse versus, I don't want to say this.
Did you say pursuing the muse?
Yeah, do you pursue the muse, or are you just we were talking about earlier, being the vessel for the music? Is it just being in the space waiting for it to happen and just letting it flow through you, or do you pursue it and try to make it happen?
Great question. I think the concept of practice and works, right? You can work on something to get better at something. You could learn to love certain things. You could also do something with the hope of maybe figuring out why you love it based on the circumstances in which you're doing it. I've met many unhappy guitarists. I've met many bored drummers. I've met many people that are doing something that should, in theory, be fulfilling as fuck. They're getting to play music. The greatest job in the world is playing music every night. I mean, come on. So if that doesn't become a sort of just part of your mental ecosystem or whatever the fuck, just doing it a different way than I'm doing it, which of course there's nothing wrong with that. So maybe there's more of a regimented landscape for certain people if they need to do certain things to do certain other things. But it's almost like if you were an explorer from like the old days, let's say you're living in Samoa, like out in the middle of the ocean, and you have your boat. I think a lot of people go out not really expecting to find anything, especially if you're discovering new worlds, and this is like the era of like what is out there. It's literally the unknown. It's like space, like traveling in space. It's the same type of thing. There's people who leave to search and find something, and then they're really stoked because, ah, cool, we hit land and now we're like king of some like rock somewhere. And there's people who just, they know that they might not ever come back, and that what they really are there for is the water, their connection to the stars, like the wind telling them things. There's different ways to view what is condensed to creativity in songwriting and things like that. Like I think everyone is capable of listening to themselves and expressing how they feel. I think if you take one look at the news, it's very apparent that's it's a common thing. But the translation of those things into again the groove, it comes back to the groove. Like George Clinton talks about this stuff all the time, but like a lot of, I think, prophets of music are constantly reminding us that there's this flame somewhere that we're all moving to. There's this rhythm, there's this beat, there's this giant clave in the sky or something. Like I feel like to describe my own process would probably tire out enough people to where like they're like, all right, fine, let me just pick up a guitar and learn a G chord. Like at that point, I've done my job because there's just so many different things you could talk about, man.
That's killer, dude. And that's, I mean, it seems like you're a dude that lives very much in the present, and you're very much somebody who takes in your surroundings. You very much you're the kind of guy to see nature and see what's around you, and for it to really mean something and interpret. It seems like you're processing a lot of what's going on around you.
There's a lot of processing. There's definitely a lot of processing. I wish I was more mountain man. I've never been camping once in my life. I've never been
No way.
I always felt like it was like a weird thing where like but yeah, no, thank you. I take that as a really nice compliment because I do try to live in the present. I think if I can remember that next time I'm like in traffic and someone, morbidly offends me for some stupid reason, I get over it quicker.
Well, I mean, that's
But
the quickest way
what
to
can
make
you
somebody
say?
turn into a savage is to be in traffic for hours, especially LA
Jeez
traffic of all places.
Louise,
I totally get that. So,
man,
but no, I mean,
man.
taking the concepts that we've talked about, one thing that fascinated me about Rajan, and I haven't heard the album yet. I've only heard the two singles that are out right now. But when you announced the album, you put that it was Chapter 6 coming July 2nd or whatever the date was. And the Chapter 6 is what fascinated me. I love the concept of albums is a lineage for the artist. And I love, yeah, especially like when an artist releases a new album, to listen to that album, go back to the old albums and listen, just jump back and forth between the old albums. But the idea, yeah, of a chapter and it being the next chapter in a thing. So I want to hear your opinion of like the lineage of the albums and where chapter six comes into play for you.
Mm, wonderful. I appreciate the care to attention, or care to detail, attention to detail. I do love looking at Night Beats in particular as a book. You know, I literally have them on my shelf right here, organized in a way that makes them seem more like books, like chapters of a book. Yeah. How to describe that? It's a little tough because there's a lot of things about what I would say makes a great novel. But I'm honestly not the most well read. I read a lot when I was little, and then I sort of got really into creating things and making things with my hands and making up my own stories. So that probably makes me a really like bad writer from a conventional sense. But within each story are more stories, and I think any story is about detail and how and color and expression and how you deliver certain lines. No one wants to read the same chapter over and over again. And without naming the title, there's a book that I've been reading that I just can't get through because I feel like each time it's either just saying the first thing that comes to its head, the writer's head, that is, which is fine. And, you know, maybe that's just what the doctor ordered for some people that day. But for me, I like artists that take their time. And I like the idea of spending enough energy on something to where you're genuinely curious about like what is next. Making yourself feel that way is paramount to making someone else feel that way, because ultimately if you're playing and you're writing disembodied in a certain sense to where it's not really for anybody else, but it's not really for you either, it's more of the present a feeling of whatever that thing is that you feel from playing that beat or strumming and finding the words to something, or connecting, you know, this thing that you wrote in this room here and recorded in this room here to a stage out in PsychFest, you know, whatever, wherever it is. Mm-hmm. You're almost like kind of creating like road journals for yourself, meaning that like this record could be at one point get like chopped and screwed and thrown up and played in different ways and everything. But like, as long as you've set sort of your cardinal directions for whatever planet you're talking about, that is, then it shows you more of like a literacy about like how the choice to use a certain sound or like of the vocabulary used on, you know, one song juxtaposed to like the way that you said, I love you in the last song. I think that stuff's interesting. So like language and creating novels of like bodies of work, you know, sometimes people literally call their records volume one, volume two, volume three. Like that's cool. But I think that there's something just stylistically more interesting to me to create each chapter, each line of each chapter for this composition that is Night Beats. I think that's kind of, it's fun, man. You know, it makes me want to just constantly create and make more. And maybe if I can circle back to like your question about creating and what's that process like, it's like, well, there's not really this fear of running out or whatever you were saying before. Like the concept of just sort of making something fluidly, generally when I meet people, like they don't really have there's just not enough to say. Like they can continue going and going and going. And, you know, maybe I just sort of like save my thoughts to communicate them in a different way. So it's not necessarily like there's more sort of like calculation of the modal fifth to the da da da, you know, whatever sort of like music theory jargon or construction side of things. But it's really just like, I trust myself. I trust myself to know that like that beat is good. And, you know, so much of what I do and people like me do is that like they're basically just they're fighting for themselves for a really long time. You're having to be the one to believe in yourself when no one else will. And that's what makes songwriting, I think, because you have to be, there's no have or should or even one who just does because they're supposed, they feel like they want to or they need to or they should. That's where you have songwriting really happening. It's playing to your empty coffee shops. It's playing to places for yourself. And, it's not about having lack of aspiration because ultimately I want to play my music to the world. I want everyone to listen and to feel something good from what I make. That's my goal, So having to believe in yourself when no one else is giving a damn is really a big part of it. And the problem is a lot of times that gets confused with ego and the construction of some sort of Ozymandias-esque statue in the desert. Like there's no need to be remembered for anything. I mean, what's the point? I mean, I don't even, really vouch for a lot of my generation's judgment on things. How would I know about the future? I think when you mention the present, that blows my skirt up a little bit because it's like, okay, yes, there's an understanding that we are able to do things right now creatively that are for us, but they do have an impact on people. And what a better privilege than to continue that. And because working as a musician, there's a lot of things to it. And a lot of people have different backgrounds and a lot of different ways of being able to continue and make an album every few years and or just like poof, like put out every little thing that they have. But sometimes you gotta go to work,
What and what I'm hearing from you is, in my opinion, a healthy perspective of growth. 'Cause I mean, even going and listening through your discography, like I hear your earlier albums like Sonic Bloom or Who Sold My Generation, even though those are a little more in, but hearing the production levels on them, and I know you were going for more of a lo-fi sound on those, but hearing the production level on the two new songs that you have out, Thank You and Hot Ghee, like to me, I hear growth in that. I know it's a little, you're playing to the songs, but you talking about your when you first started and your sister's camcorder footage, and you were like, "What is this crap?" But what I'm hearing is there's growth there, and you're recognizing the growth, and you're growing with yourself in that.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny you mentioned the Sonic Bloom and things, and I would argue that this record is like technically more lo-fi
Oh,
than
really?
some of the stuff I was using back then. Yeah, but
I don't have the technical understanding of it. I hear to me, it's the crispness and the cleanness of it is what I'm equating it
Yes.
to. Like that's I definitely like
Big
'cause when
time.
I heard Hot Ghee, like the levels in Hot Ghee, like the amount of like
Yeah.
channels, I guess is what you would call it. Like there's so
Sure.
many things going on in the way they're panning and everything. To me,
Yeah,
it
yeah.
seems like there's so much production ideology put into
Yeah,
it.
yeah. Oh,
That
well
I think
put.
maybe that's how I'm approaching it in those terms is like the production ideology is heightened in those in what I've
Yeah.
heard so far on Rajan.
Yeah, I think nail on the head right there. Performance is key, but like again, it's like you can have a methodology or an ideology about how you want to get that thing onto that album, like onto like that page or whatever. But playing it and performing it is 90% of everything, man. I mean, take any lick, it's all about attitude. Anything that is to me worth a damn. It needs to be fearsome in some degree. It needs to be fighting for something. It needs to be proving something.
Talking about your previous work and the things that you've done, I say this not to belittle anything you've done because I think you have a fantastic discography, but your Levitation Sessions that you put out is, in my opinion, the best thing you've put out. I have repeatedly gone back to it and am repeatedly blown away, not just from the music, but there's a great video that
Thanks, man.
y'all put up on YouTube, and it's incredible, just especially like the way it goes from afternoon to night. I love
Yeah.
that. But can you kind of tell me about
Thanks.
that experience? I'd love to hear some backstory of just how that all came together.
Sure. I was wanting to film the band for a while, and I few things. Well, Levitation, those people are great. Rob's an old friend of mine, and he has a great ear. So Rob was putting together Levitation folks. They were putting together this Levitation series around the same time when I was kind of on a mission to just record the band. This is the end of 2019, and I'd gone through a few tours with a few different lineups, touring musicians, for the band that come and go in different capacities. When I was wanting to shoot something with the full group, I sort of just went into a room with two buddies of mine that are dear friends, Hamilton and Danny. They were there to listen, and from there came from this combination of like, well, we all live live in Pompeii, but let's try to keep our options open, keep our mind open. So like, because ultimately I think what that accomplished back in the day was such a beautiful marriage of like scenery and location and music and sort of like this dance between the two of them, and that's what makes it timeless, that's what makes it great. And plus Pink Floyd rule.
Oh, absolutely.
So creating something that was very straightforward was also the goal. So I wanted to record to tape, but I had the problem of being in the desert. And how do you do that with being outside in the desert and a tape machine being, historically a pretty attention-y thing? What's the word? Can't necessarily roll it down a hill and expect it to work, like that's sort of, but you just, oh, shit happens. What can you say? With tape, like I've lost so many takes just based on the fact that it's like an older method. So, but that was a really important method. So I was able to work with my friend Ian and Mikey. And they were able to bring out the tape machine. We just sort of, I just had the mission statement of this is just going to be us in the earth, like it's going to be us playing the same level of intensity and emotion that I would give the songs anywhere. So yeah, we went out, and it coincided with the Levitation project at an interesting time too, because they were trying to put bands up that were, stuck inside and not sure what to do with themselves. And by that point, I was already, that was like the second live thing that I filmed, so I was using that time just to do as much as I could, man. Like kind of like, school's out and the auditorium's open, you sneak in there, sneak into the pool, like I filmed a video in Chinatown and there's like nobody there,
That's awesome.
and getting to go out and do these songs with Night and Day. Yeah, there's a lot of thought that went into it, and I appreciate you appreciating it.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I'm curious, was it one long, like, did y'all just play the show, like one long show, like a normal show, or was it like, okay, this song's done, we need to re-record it, or just kind of how did y'all do that?
We did, let's
Let me
see.
tell you why I'm asking.
Sure.
I'm asking because I'm curious, like you were talking about, the surroundings. I mean, it seems like it would be easy to get lost in the surroundings, especially when you're playing like psychedelic music out there.
Yeah.
And so that's, I'm wondering, like, if y'all played it like one straight show, like how lost in the music did you get, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I know what you mean. How much of like a spectator can I be during during an event, during something like that? Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, we had to work with the sun, like at the end of the day, like we timed it, we timed everything to where, like, for instance, Cream Johnny, like we wanted to play that song as the sun was going down. So like there's a section in it, we set our timers and we looked at the sun, and we got it figured out to when we could do that. I felt like that's all you got was a great nighttime shot, a song to play to the stars. So the other tracks, like we had an order and we wanted to get a good take. So some of them we redid, some of them we kept the first take, making sure that, when you work with the team, like you have to make sure everyone's having fun and doing well, and honestly being fed and hydrated. Like if you work on a crew and things, like it's not about you, it's about us. Yeah, there were definitely times when I zoned out while I was playing. I think it'll always make me chuckle in the back of my head when I watch that and I see those moments because I remember them. But lucky to have that memory,
It's very cool. Well, man, as we start to kind of as we kind of start to wrap up a little bit, I want to talk about, so right now what you're doing is you're working in a trio. Can you tell me what was the decision to move forward as a trio?
Yeah.
Because like you and I were talking before about trios and just kind of how I feel about them, and my personal, I'm fascinated by trios. I think there's a lot of magic and rawness that comes from being in a trio that you're not going to get in any other band, regardless of how raw the music may be. And so that's what I was just wondering what your perspective on it was.
Yeah, I always felt like a trio was kind of the coolest. I always felt like it was just a straight up. It was just like, I have a personal problem with keyboards in a lot of bands, and I play keyboards here, you know, literally like I'm a fan of the instrument. So not to belittle anything, but I think a lot of times the traveling troupe it gets, you know, the circus gets a little crazy for it, and you start not doing your stretches, and you start like letting certain things slide and become a little bit more watered down by having larger production. I think it's sort of a general philosophy I keep with myself in general, is less is more type of thing. Mm-hmm. And also when you're trying to communicate a certain message or relate an idea, you know, you don't need much if you have your choice of words established. Mm-hmm. I think that a three-piece is cool, man. I think a three-piece, especially for the type of music that I like, I need to see what's happening. I need to see where the music's coming from. I have a big problem with people hitting play and playing karaoke on tour. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty nasty opinion on that. So people could do whatever they want, but as far as for me and what I like to be involved with, I need to see what's happening. And I love the challenge, man, because, you know, certain songs, for instance, that we just played at this Psychfest show in Austin, we'd never practiced. We had a couple warm-up shows in SoCal before we left, but I wasn't sure how I'd be able to play some of these songs. Mm-hmm. The songs are not out yet. One's called Blues, the first track we played at the show. And it has like a West Coast whistle sort of almost borderline hip hop, Chicano soul, like slow riding kind of feel to it. And I'm like, if we can do that as a three piece, then really everything's doable, you know, like then let's go. Because I feel like if you're able to play your song with just yourself and a guitar or maybe one instrument, then you're good. Then your song's set. You know, you're able to do it. So to me, adding a bass, oh, yes, please. And then adding some drums, oh, yes, please. You know, putting keys and then putting rhythm guitar and then backup singers and all these things. These are all great things. But like, I think two is too small. I think three is just enough, you know, like, I don't know. Like, and someone who's done the two piece thing many times over the years, and the solo thing many times over the years, I think three is like kind of the magic number. It leaves little room for the faint of hearted, you know?
Yeah.
Like you kind of have to just be crazy to do it. But also just like, what are you saying with those three instruments? And it just is a way for me personally to have fun with like kind of exploring what I'm doing with my instrument, because a guitar is not just the guitar. I mean, we all know that. Hendrix proved that wrong, you know, whatever, 80 years ago. Shit, how long is it? 60s? Where it's like,
it's 40 been
plus 20.
Yes, 60 years. Oh my gosh, that's just said it. So, oh, yeah. Dude, wow.
Well, my favorite thing is when people like say, oh man, that song, it sounds so much like this song, and then they try to make you feel weird about it, and I'm like, bro, the song is like 80 years old, your reference. Like, I'm sorry, but yes, I love Ella Fitzgerald, and you know what, maybe subconsciously there's like some Ella lines that come in my head, but like, can we not, shout outs for the historians here, you know, like,
exactly.
Like, part of my tradition here is preserving culture, you know, preserving oral tradition, and for me, it's blues music, and it's soul music, and it's R&B, and it's psychedelic, and it's everything in between.
Well, Danny, this has been such a great conversation, dude. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I feel like we didn't talk about Rajan that much, so I'll give you a second. What do you want to say about the album, dude? I've loved the early two singles. It seems like it's going to be a really cool album. What do you dig about it? What are you excited about it getting heard by everybody?
Man, thank you. You know, Hotkey is out. I really like that song. I love playing it live. Shoot, man. There's a song called Blue that it's track two And it's not one of the singles because we have to just pick three, and it was a group decision how to pose each one and stack them and sort of introduce different shades of color and things. And I feel like the song Blues is kind of like one of, it's like the unannounced real single to me. So we're gonna put it out right before the record comes out.
Nice.
People can hear it just to get one last little sort of taste before they drop, and
Nice.
what else? I don't know. I was up till like 5 last night working on the video for the song Nightmare that's coming out in 5 days. We're making the teasers for that right now. We as in myself here. My team. Yeah, my hard cracking team. But yeah, just very, very lucky, man. I'm, as you said, present. You said present minded, and I was like, oh, cool, because like I'll
Yeah.
take that. Just getting the chance to talk about it and knowing that it's gonna be listened to some groovy people is all I need. So I really appreciate the chance to talk about it and working on the next one. I'm preparing for a tour in June. Not Nightbeats, but Abraxas with Witch. And actually getting to play guitar with Witch, so I'm learning those songs right
Nice.
now, and or I should say relearning them because I love that band and one of my favorites. So yeah, what else? Kiss your mama, hug your mama.
Always.
I think Mother's Day, this will probably be out before or after then, but
Yeah.
that's on Sunday, and love baby.
That's dude, that's the perfect spot to end it, man. Danny, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.